Good morning, everybody. Hope you're ready to hear the lesson. So while thinking about what to do my lesson upon this morning, I had quite a bit of thoughts, but then I was sitting there doing the Luke study, and I go, you know what? I've had this sermon in my back pocket for quite some time. About the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus, about the gospel story. And I figured we were going to be talking about what I could have sworn was going to be the birth of John and Jesus. So I figured I would do about the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus for my sermon this morning. Just happens to so fall on what holiday it is. And then I come to realize that it was about the conception of Jesus this morning, but I decided, you know what, I'll still do it. If you want to open up to 2 Samuel chapter 15, that is where I will be teaching the gospel story out of in this part of David's life. To brush up on it, this is when Absalom decides to usurp the throne of David and take over the kingship. So that is the story of David's life that we are going to, I'm going to discuss with you this morning. So I'll go ahead and start reading the first 13 verses of 2 Samuel chapter 15. In the course of time, Absalom provided himself with a chariot and horses and with 50 men to run ahead of him. He would get up early and stand by the side of the road leading to the city gate. Whenever anyone came with a complaint to be placed before the king for a decision, Absalom would call out to him, "What town are you from?" And he would answer, "Your servant is from one of the tribes of Israel." Then Absalom would say to him, "Look, your claims are valid and proper, but there is no representative of the king to hear you." And Absalom would add, "If only I were appointed judge in the land, then everyone who has a complaint or case could come to me and I would see that they receive justice." Also, whenever anyone approached him to bow down before him, Absalom would reach out his hand, take hold of him, and kiss him. Absalom behaved in this way toward all the Israelites who came to the king asking for justice, and so he stole the hearts of the people of Israel. At the end of 4 years, Absalom said to the king, "Let me go to Hebron and fulfill a vow I've made to the Lord. While your servant was living in Geshur in Aram, I made this vow, if the Lord takes me back to Jerusalem, I will worship the Lord in Hebron." The king said to him, "Go in peace." So he went to Hebron. Then Absalom sent secret messengers throughout the tribes of Israel to say, "As soon as you hear the sound of the trumpets, then say, 'Absalom is king in Hebron.'" 200 men from Jerusalem had accompanied Absalom. They had been invited as guests and went quite innocently, knowing nothing about the matter. While Absalom was offering sacrifices, he also sent for Ahithophel, the Gilonite, David's counselor, to come from Gilah, his hometown. And so the conspiracy against gained strength, and Absalom's following kept on increasing. So we can see here that Absalom is starting to usurp the throne from David. And it's been a four-year journey of this, trying to turn the hearts and minds of the people. This is in John chapter 14 is what I'm comparing this to. If you want to flip over there to John chapter 14. And this is where Jesus states that Satan is ruler of the world. And in this way, Absalom is not the legitimate king of Israel, just as much as Satan is not the legitimate king of the world. Christ and God are. So in 14:30, I will not say much more to you, for the prince of this world is coming. He has no hold over me, but he comes so that the world may learn that I love the Father and do exactly what my Father has commanded me." So we see in this role of Absalom is kind of taking on that role there. Not obviously, he's not going to be as strong as Satan or influential as Satan is, but we do see that it's a illegitimate takeover, and he's usurping the throne in that way. We also see, if you noticed, David's counselor betrays him as well. He's a beloved friend of David's. Just as if you, many of the Gospels, Judas betraying Jesus, Matthew 26, 10 through 16. I'm not going to read it. I think we all are familiar enough with Judas being the betrayer to get the things going for the crucifixion. I'm going to go ahead and we're going to skip down to verses 19 through 22 now in chapter 15 of 2 Samuel while I'm painting this picture of how this part of David's life is a reflection of the gospel story. So starting in verse 19, "The king said to Ittai the Gittite, 'Why should you come along with us? Go back and stay with King Absalom. You are a foreigner, an exile from your homeland. You come only yesterday, and today shall I make you wander about going about with us when I do not know where I am going. Go back and take your people with you. May the Lord show you kindness and faithfulness.' But Ittai replied to the king, 'As surely as the Lord lives and as my lord the king lives, wherever my lord the king may be, whether it means life or death, there will your servant be.'" So we see here, we have this person, he just showed up a couple days ago, and David's fleeing for his life now, because Absalom sounded the horn and is taking over the kingship and is now marching towards Jerusalem. And this individual wants to follow David. And David plainly explains to him, "I have no clue where I'm going. I don't know how long this is going to take. Or you can just stay in Jerusalem. You just showed up. You know, Absalom's not going to consider you a friend of mine because you haven't been there long enough." And Ittai says, "Wherever you go, I'll go." And how many times in Jesus' Gospels do we get people going, "Lord, I want to follow you." And Jesus pretty much lays it out to them. This is the price to follow me. A good example is Matthew chapter 8, 19 through 20, when Jesus is talking about how, you know, foxes have dens, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head down. So we see the price that it comes to follow Jesus and how many followers will come to with David while he's fleeing. And he does explain to them what the price is to follow him in this, just as Christ does as well. So moving on to verses 25 through 26, David is now on the Mount of Olives. And then the king said to Zadok, "Take the ark of God back into the city. If I find favor in the Lord's eyes, he will bring me back and let me see it and his dwelling place again. But if he says, 'I will not be pleased with you,' then I am ready. Let him do to me whatever seems good to him." So we see here on the Mount of Olives, Zadok, the high priest, and the Levites have brought out the Ark of the Covenant because they're taking it wherever the king is at. And David tells them to bring it back, surrendering also to God's will on the Mount of Olives right here, that if it is the Father's will, I will see the Ark of the Covenant again. And we think about Matthew 26, verses 36 through 39, when Jesus is praying on the Mount of Olives before his death, not my will, but your will be done, surrendering his will to the Father on what must happen for the crucifixion. And then in verses 30, David is weeping on the Mount of Olives. And then we get in Luke chapter 19, 37 through 41, and chapter 22, verse 44, where Jesus is weeping and praying earnestly on the Mount of Olives, sweating to the point of blood. Even in chapter 19 of Luke, where he is talking about how he wanted to protect Jerusalem from and be like a mother hen to them. So in chapter 16 now, verses 1 through 2, when David had gone a short distance beyond the summit, there was Ziba, the steward of Mephibosheth, waiting to meet him. He had a string of donkeys saddled and loaded with 200 loaves of bread, 100 cakes of raisins, 100 cakes of figs, and skin of wine. Then the king said to Ziba, "Why have you brought these?" So David here is receiving gifts and supplies for this journey he's about to go on. And Ziba is the servant to Mephibosheth, however that is pronounced. I will just call him Mephibo. And Mephibo is Jonathan, one of Saul's family members that is sitting at David's table since David has been king. And he is the one who is crippled and cannot walk around. That is who he is. So Ziba is a servant to him, bringing these goods. And also, Christ did receive gifts and also supplies throughout his journey. We see in Matthew 2, verses 1 through 11, is the three wise men bestowing upon the frankincense, myrrh, and gold to him. But also in chapter 26, 6 through 13, where the woman is weeping at his feet and anointing him with oil and alabaster. As well, and Jesus says she is doing the right thing here. So even David is receiving gifts just as Christ received gifts as well. And then verses 5 through 10, I will go ahead and read this. As King David approached Bahurim, a man from the same clan as Saul's family came out from there. His name was Shimei, son of Gera, and he cursed, and as he came out, he pelted David and all the king's officials with stones. Though all the troops and the special guard were on David's right and left, as he cursed, Shimei said, get out, you murderer, you scoundrel. The Lord has repaid you for all the blood you have shed in the household of Saul, in whose place you have reigned. The Lord has given the kingdom into the hands of your son Absalom. You have come to ruin because you are a murderer. Then Abishai, son of Zechariah, said to the king, why should this dead dog curse my lord the king? Let me go over and cut off his head. But the king said, what does this have to do with you, you sons of Zerulah? If he is cursing because the Lord said to him, curse David, who can ask, why do you do this? David then said to Abishai and all his officials, my son, my only flesh and blood is trying to kill me. How much more then this Benjamite? Leave me alone. Let him curse, for the Lord has told him to. It may be that the Lord will look upon my misery and restore me to his covenant blessing instead of his curse today. So we see while he's walking out of the city and fleeing from this, that he is being cursed just as in Matthew 27, verses 39 through 44, when Jesus is on the cross, not only are the two people on the cross hurling insults at him, but so are other people as well, Roman officials and people just passing by as well. And the interesting thing about this too is that both of them show mercy to this man as well in verses 19, verses 21 through 23. Verses 19, 21 through 23. Then Abishai, son of Zeruiah, said, "Shouldn't Shimei be put to death for this? He cursed the Lord's anointed." David replied, "What does this have to do with you, you sons of Zeruiah? What right do you have to interfere? Should anyone be put to death in Israel today? Don't I know that today I am king over Israel?" So the king said to Shimei, "You shall not die," and the king promised him an oath. So we see David forgives this man for the curses he pelted on him. Well, most likely he deserved death, and David granted him mercy. But we see Jesus on the cross also forgives one of the men on there and says that he will be in paradise today, just as much as... So there's those comparisons there. And then in chapter 17, verse 23, this going back to the counselor that betrayed David, after Ahithophel saw this and his advice had not been followed, he saddled his donkey and set out for his house in his hometown. He put his house in order and then hanged himself. So he died and was buried in his father's tomb. And Matthew 27, 3 through 5, Judas hangs himself. So David was the anointed one, considered the anointed one, and the one friend who betrayed him hung himself, just as Judas, who betrayed the anointed one, Jesus, hung himself as well. And then going to chapter 18, verses 14 through 15, where David is restored his kingship. I'll start at verse 12. But the men replied, "Even if 1,000 shekels were weighed out into my hands, I would not lay a hand on the king's son. In our hearing, the king commanded you and Abishai and Itali, protect the young man Absalom for my sake. And if I had put my life in jeopardy and nothing is hidden from the king, you would have kept your distance from me." Joab said, "I am not going to wait like this for you." So he took 3 javelins in his hand and plunged them into Absalom's heart. While Absalom was still alive in the oak trees, and 10 of Joab's armor bearers surrounded Absalom, struck him, and killed him. Then Joab sounded the trumpet, and the troops stopped pursuing Israel, for Joab halted them. They took Absalom, threw him into a big pit in the forest, and piled up a large heap of rocks over him. Meanwhile, all the Israelites fled to their homes. So we see here of these 3 javelins being thrusted into Absalom. And in Luke 24, 1 through 7 is when one of the parts where Jesus is talking about where he'll be in the grave for 3 days. And I believe these 3 javelins are representing the 3 days in the tomb to restore David back his kingship, just as Christ was in the tomb for 3 days. And that we also see that through this death comes the victory for David, just as victory comes to us through Christ's death, burial, and resurrection. If you flip over to 1 Corinthians 15, verses with me if you want. 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 54 is where I'm going to start. When the perishable has been clothed with the imperishable and the mortal with the immortality, then the saying that is written will come true. Death has been swallowed up in victory. Where, O death, is your sting? Where, O death, is your victory? Where, O death, is your sting? And then in Revelations 9, Revelations chapter 5, Revelations chapter 5, verses 9 through 10. And they sang a new song, "You are worthy to take the scroll and to open its seal, because you were slain, and with your blood you purchased for God persons from every tribe and language and people of nation. You have made them to be a kingdom and priests to serve our God and Father, and they will reign on earth." So we see through these key things right here that I pointed out on how this story points to some foreshadowing from David on Christ's life and the gospel story, and David losing his kingship, where you could consider him dead in the grave, and then when his son Absalom dies and he travels back to Jerusalem, regaining his life and regaining his kingship that was rightfully his, just as Jesus, when he was resurrected, got his back as well. And then before we close out, there's something I wrote that I would like to read before we have the invitation song. I wrote this about 2 months ago. I labeled it, "What Shall I?" Hopefully this is a motivation for you guys, but this goes along with my sermon. What shall I do to spread the loving gospel? What shall I say to make a deaf man hear? What shall I bring to feed a hungry soul? What shall I give to show my King's love? What shall I tread to holy worship you? I will give it all to spread the loving gospel. I will belt on high so even the dead can hear. I will bring living bread that others may be filled. I shall give it all to show my King's endless love. I will tread his words, for they are what saved me. Who was mocked on high so that I could hear his words? Who was put to shame that I might rise in glory? Who was scourged and beaten so I am not in pain? Who was nailed upon a tree so death would pass over me? Who rose from the grave to put death to shame? Jesus was raised up to glorify the Father. Jesus took the shame, so now I sing on high. The Lamb took my retribution, so I could have eternal life. The King took my cross to display the Father's mercy. My Father raised him high to the place all saints will be. So at this time, the lesson is yours. I hope you saw the foreshadowing that I pointed out in this story of David, and we'll turn it over to Keith now for song 489.